Testing, testing. This is not a test. And welcome to the Delicious Recipe.
And it's with your host, The Dell, here on UPRN Talk Radio 107.7 FM, New Orleans. And you can check us out live video on YouTube and also on Twitch, I believe. And you can listen to us everywhere else that podcasts are being broadcast. And also check out the UPRN talkradio.com site there. Become a member. And there's a lot of bonus content that's there. And you can check out all the rest of the interesting shows and with the other content of the other hosts that are on this network. So that's on UPRNtalkradio.com. So what do we got here today on the Delicious Recipe? And I just want to say also hello to all you guys out there listening in the ether. So today, what did I call this one? I believe I called this one Mystic Pizza or Ancient Mystic Pizza. And it's going to be dealing with ancient artifacts that have been written out or have been talked about in stories, songs, even in religious texts. Just everything that's been sort of through the history, and we've seen a lot of these things in movies and in books, fantasy, fiction, nonfiction, lots of stories, and even through history, a lot of these items have been mentioned, and some cultures and societies have gone out and searched for them. Some say they have them. Some of them are on display in museums and private collections and stuff like that. But we'll get into that in a little bit. What else do we got going on here in the world as we go on here in the Delicious Recipe? Well, we are still dealing with this COVID-19 dilemma, I guess you would say. There's talks that this vaccine, I guess, is coming out into the public very soon, which is sort of surprising when you listen to other medical professionals. And even though they want to call this a Project Warp Speed or whatever, but still testing trials still take time, which I find sort of interesting, is that when they've talked about vaccine test trials, that they have to go through all these preliminary steps, and then over a certain period of time you see how the body reacts to these things. So what might happen over one day or 2 days or a month to 3 months to a year, that's why they do these long testing stuff when they create vaccines or any sort of medicine and pill form and stuff like that, that there's an extensive test and is done in gradual steps and with a many, many people and follow-ups, and it takes years. And I still think it's sort of interesting that that this process has been sort of subverted into this, hey, we just have to get this thing out here and we'll worry about testing or worry about the effects. It sort of seems how it's going to affect the populace afterwards. So just interesting parts on that. Still dealing, I guess, in the States there with this election. Sorry if I'm looking off there a bit there. I'm trying to get this other part set up. Looking at the election area going on there, and I guess lots of unfolding dilemmas that are going on with that, with what I guess it's not even called voter fraud, but I guess you would say voter or ballot manipulation, which seems to be coming to light with this. I think Sidney Powell, I guess she's doing that separately on her own, and also Giuliani and the Trump campaign with all their stuff going on. So you can follow a lot of that going happening, and it almost, I guess with the news there now, you sort of say that it gets sort of tiring listening to it because they have all this talking about situations that are happening and that these things are going to be released, this and that. I guess things take time, but how much time? And you just sort of get tired of hearing about it on the news. But there's still restrictions and regulations are being put into place up here in Canada. there's a story down in Southern Ontario with a business, I think it's a restaurant, I believe, that's been sort of been shut down several times. Every time that he gets charged and taken away, he comes back and opens up the restaurant again. And I guess this comes down to a question of essential and what is considered essential. Now, there's a term called essential services, which you would figure would be like your hospital, your ambulance, fire department, police, military, I guess, in a way. Essential, those would be there. But you also have to look at how the government is phrasing the word essential. And if you look at it, what's happening with the mom and pop stores or the small non-big box office stores, they're all sort of shut down and continue to be shut down, and they have their rents to pay, I guess, and they have to also make money too. But in respect to that, or in part to that, is that you have big box stores like Walmart, you have your grocery stores that are open, and they're trying to close down convenience stores or even just other small little stores throughout the area, like restaurants and stuff like that. Even if you had a takeout delivery, and I've seen this all over in England as well, is that I think there was a story that was out there about a small business that sold like a Hallmark business, like sold cards and greeting gifts and stuff like that. And under the rules that were put in place for restrictions for opening is that you could only be open if you serve food. So I believe they started serving some snacks and hot dogs and coffee and stuff like that. But I guess that didn't meet the regulation to the people, the powers that be, that want to close down small businesses and that. And so they were unfortunately harassed by police and with notices from the township and stuff like that, that they were in violation because they, it's just crazy anyways. And it just seems to be, it's a really, really weird situation that sort of has transpired over this, this year, and about what could be open and what can't be open. And it just seems like, it doesn't seem like it's a fair leveling out of business, and it hurts people in many, many ways. And so I had written down this little thought that I had there. I'll read it out here. Hopefully I can read my own writing here, but just a thought that I had over the weekend time and just over this past year. So what did I have written here? Okay. I find it amazing how the shift of control has slowly changed the fabric of life. People are willing to die in the sword over a piece of fabric and not notice the bigger flagrant violation of personal freedoms, thoughts, and beliefs. A year ago, you couldn't enter a bank, a store, a business with a facial covering, and now that's all totally all changed. A growing list or stack of restrictions and regulations are decimating regular life on a basis of shoddy, disputable science. The separation of thought fosters no debating or listening to conversation. A totalitarian rule has begun to bring about the great reset change. And we talked about this before, about the great reset and change that was I think a couple of shows ago. But this thought with these UN and economic forum people, and basically this big corporation business and high-ranking government control officials that have gone there, and they want to change the world towards this 2030 agenda. And we talked about this 2030 agenda before, but if you want to go back to it, you can look back. I have other shows that I think that talk about that as well. Okay, so when I got there, a totalitarian rule that has begun to bring about the great system change, moving towards a bleak future of caged lab rats. And you see that most are so concerned about now and their limited view outside of themselves that you don't see the constant change. Look back to 10, 20 plus years ago and compare it to today. There were viruses then, globally transmutable on a severity comparable to this COVID-19. Look at all the events that have transpired and have changed the everyday life over the past 100 years. And I'm talking about technology and all that stuff too as well, that bring us to a lack of taken away of personal freedoms. Government should be benefiting the country equally and making it stronger and an easier life for all, not acting like a ruler warden of a jailed state. And that's the way it's sort of looking like this with these restrictions and they're put on. Like, I don't care about the mask. You know what? And I'll put on a piece of fabric, and if I have to walk into a store, don't really care. But when you get into things that you have stores that are open, and then you saw this happen in, I think it was in Wisconsin with the governor there. I believe her name is Whitmer or something like that. But you see that inside the store, things that were considered essential, and that's getting into this sort of this dictatorship about what you can and can't buy. And this is just crazy stuff. We've seen what's happening here in Canada, in I believe it's Manitoba, in Winnipeg, is the premier, which I guess would be relatable to a governor in the States, has mandated that in certain stores, certain items as well cannot be bought. And this is coming up. We're coming into December now, Christmas time. And there's a story, you can check it out on Rebel News off of YouTube, where they've closed down areas inside of Walmart that you're not able to buy. They're restricted items now because they are considered non-essential. And things like gifts, toys, clothing, cards, just anything that's sort of that's non-essential as considered by this premier, which is really, really insane. And this is taking things to a whole nother level about what you can and cannot purchase. See, things you can purchase, if you want to go on Amazon or go buy online, there's a lot of things that you can be sent to and sent to your house and bought. But going to the store and picking up that item is restricted in some parts. And that's a really, really scary sort of thing to look at about how these dictatorship type rule of people that are in power are imposing on people. They're basically treating the rest of the population like children, or just this is what you can and can't do. And that's the whole part that I've mentioned before about how government should not be there to be like, there is regulations and there is laws and stuff like that. That's all well and fine. I totally agree with all that stuff there. But the minutiae details of setting in all this extra stuff, and you see how the course of life, my 50 years, that's the way I can relate it to. I can't relate it to all your situations, but you see how the slow control has taken over and there's more restrictions go on. And that's what I sort of meant by that, is that with technology and with the way government should go, is that things should become easier as we technologically move forward and we get items that do a lot more help and work for us. I related to this story or this thing that I say before, is like, if you look back at a potato 50 years ago, what the cost of a potato is and what the cost of a potato is now due to inflation. But you look also to the part is that to grow that potato, you had to do that with your hands, shovel and dig a garden and stuff like that. And as technology moved forward, we had machines starting to do that, whereas you probably take you a week to do a whole 100 by 100 size field to go and plant a whole thing of potatoes. Now you could do 50 football fields in the course of a day, tilling and planting it. And then the same thing like that. So technology created a more abundance of things that made it easier to do stuff. And even though like it does cost a little bit of money to buy these things and that, but you're creating a lot more quantity and availability, and which actually in a way sort of reduced the price because of the amount, the surplus that is able to be created. But that doesn't seem to happen there. And it just seems that the way that this world banking government, the way the money system and that has sort of evolved over the years and stuff like that, is that things do not get cheaper, things do not get less expensive or easier. Yes, it becomes more expensive, and everything goes up. And you can see you can see that through the timeline of both what things cost back then to what things cost right now. And there seems to be some sort of manipulation in the big banking and corporation stuff there to create more of this capitalistic society. And there's been talks about that, that capitalism may in one day end up falling there because it cannot support itself with the resources and the population density. But that's another topic that we can get into there later on. Oh, what was another thing that I had there? Well, I came up with it also with this sort of joke. Now, I'm not sure if this joke, that it's something that I might have heard in my past or something like that, or just remembered it. But I don't know, it's sort of like a dark joke or whatever. A sheep goes out for a stroll and comes upon an ostrich with its head in the sand. The sheep asks, "What's going on here?" The ostrich replies, "Nothing to see here." So the sheep goes on its merry way, oblivious to the world around it. And you can see a lot of people are like that. okay, and we'll move on. But also moving on with things there, as we're here today, ancient mystic pizza, ancient artifacts that have been around and been in through stories. And I'm not neither confirming or denying any proof or existence or function of any of these things. So it's just information stuff as we throw more things into the delicious pot of recipes and see what you think about them and that. So what we got there? Well, there's lots of different artifacts of power, weapons, magic and stuff like that. And we got these in historical text stories and various fiction movies and TV shows, books talk all about mystical artifacts. And it's sort of, I've talked about this before about on previous shows about metals and gold and stuff like that. And I was trying to figure out what the importance, why gold became so important, because it doesn't serve any sort of a function in the human body for survival at all. I think there's a gold can be used in a very small amount. I think it's for like a rheumatoid arthritis or whatever that it helps in that. But other than that, for medicine, there's nothing for it. People have talked about monatomic gold. And I did a show about gold last year, talking about that in the whole part about monatomic gold and how it's an impossibility that you could actually take that stuff through, because the vaporization of gold that gets it down to the atom is like 760 or 780 degrees. So I don't think you'd be ingesting anything at that sort of heat level that it would actually do anything in the atom type level. But a lot of these artifacts and stuff like that, they're in gold or in some sort of precious metal or with some sort of precious stone. And that's the only reason that I would ever think about why gold would have been important there. And that's just my theory on that. That's why we had that there. See, I'm all over the place, all over the time. Anyways, but the whole thing is about these through stories. Now we have things like are written about in the Bible. There was written about the Ark of the Covenant, and then in stories there about the Holy Grail. And there's been movies written about that, and I think there's even a TV show that's out there about the Curse of Oak Island and what's supposed to be buried down into the ground under Oak Island. And I think there's supposed to be either the Ark or the Holy Grail. It might have been brought there by the Knights Templar when they escaped Europe and hid it out over there with a bunch of other treasures and stuff like that. I always found that sort of show, it was sort of interesting at the beginning, then at the Curse of Oak Island show. And I just didn't understand why they didn't do anything like the Boston Big Dig. And because they always had this problem with water flooding their boreholes for them to go down, I think with the Boston Big Dig, what they did was they drilled a whole series of holes all around, I guess, a perimeter area. And what they did in Boston was they were driving a tunnel boring machine through. And because the ground stuff was so soft, that it would cave in and they couldn't get a proper hole whilst they were filling in around it. So they froze the ground, they solidified it so they could put the drill through. And as these tunnel boring machines, they build the whole wall exterior around it as it keeps on going through like a worm. But I don't understand why they didn't do the same thing at the Oak Island site, because that would have made more sense. You go and drill a whole series of holes all around the area that you're going to do. Then you just excavate out the center area. So it blocks off all the water flow. You take everything out, it goes through all your sieves, and then you find out if there was anything buried, whatever it is, 140, 160 feet down under the ground. And that would have saved them a lot of money anyways. And that would have, but I guess then they wouldn't have had the show on for how many seasons it's on. But things like that. And in history, you have the Nazis were out looking for ancient artifacts. And they made light of that in the Indiana Jones, the Temple of Doom. That was also, I guess, the Ark of the Covenant in that story as well. And there, because of the power that was sort of put towards what it was there that contained. I'll get into the Ark of the Covenant more and more in the time going on there. I think I want to go and do this maybe a monthly. I'll do like once a month or once every couple months. I'll go through a bunch of ancient artifacts. So we'll see how it goes. Write in the comments if you like to hear something about that. But what's some other ones there? You have Ark of the Covenant, Spear of Destiny, the Helmet of Power, which was supposed to be Hades' helmet. That was passed on to many others in the Greek, Roman, and Norse mythologies. You got things, Stargates, Ring of Solomon, flying carpets. All just powerful artifacts that were out there. You have magical, and these are supposed to be, real magical artifacts that people actually held and had belief that these things had some sort of mystical power associated to them. It was like the Ring of Ra. Howard Carter used that in when he was excavating Tutankhamun, that sort of protected him away from the curse that was there. The Hand of Glory, I'll get into that one because I'm going to talk about the Hand of Glory. Durandal, which was a sword, which was Hector's sword, and it's something that could cut through anything. The Lothar crystal gave you protection, luck, wealth, and power. The Seven League boots, that was in Europe, were able to give you one step, would give you about 30 kilometers or 18.5 miles. The Solomon ring, or King Solomon's ring, or the Seal of Solomon. Talk about that one too, if we get enough time there today. What do you got there? You got the Killing Stone, Spear of Destiny, the Adder Stone, Goldenbrook. Like every single country sort of has some sort of lore or history of some sort of magical item. And then you have like supernatural items that are in different histories too as well, like Buddha's Tooth, the Foundation Stone, that's a Temple Mount. And there's a big war that ends up, there still is a controversy and that's going on there. I guess you would say sort of a war between the three religious factions on who has right to the Temple Mount and the Foundation Stone area. I think there's also King Solomon's Temple that was supposed to be around there. You have the Jewish faith and I can't remember all that's involved in that, but there's quite a bit. That's another one to get into. The Blood of Saint Yanvaris. Actually, we'll talk about that one too, because I found that's an actually interesting one. And then you have weapons, like the green dragon crested blade, Hrunting and Nagailing, the Ryu Jingbing, that was the monkey rod, the monkey king iron rod, just different weapons and items and objects that people have sought over time and have gone and looked for these things find these, thinking that they would give them some sort of magical or some sort of bonus power or anything like that. Like, here we go. Let's start off with one of the first ones I got here. The Hand of Glory. This was based out of a European thing, and I think there's one of them at the Whitby Museum in, I believe it's in England, if that's where the museum is. But what it was is it's a dried and pickled hand of a hanged man, usually the left hand, which was considered the sinister hand. But if the man committed murder, it was the hand that he did the deed. Also, the fat from the hanged man was rendered down to make a candle. So how this thing is supposed to work is that this hand is that you light the candle and you place it in the palm of the pickled hand of the dead man or the hanged man, and it makes all the people in the vicinity motionless except for the holder. And it was also that it would unlock any door that it came across. So it was a perfect tool for a thief. And in some versions of it, it was made from the hair of the man's head. And that was the wick. And what it would do is that, like I said, it would stop everybody, make them all motionless. And then you could open up any door that you wanted. So if you were a thief and you wanted to get into some place to go and steal something, so steal an artifact, steal a powerful artifact like that was being held in some castle or some museum or something like that, you'd be able to walk right in. No one would be able to stop you, get it, go out. And I think it was written also in one of the stories there as well, is that it could only be put out by milk. That was sort of one of the constituents to this monkey hand. And this, people actually believe that it actually did what it said. Now here's an interesting one that I was looking at. I don't know if I got all the facts, but I tried to get as much stuff as I could on this one here. It's the blood of Saint Januarius, Januarius. This is from Italy. Januarius I, Benvenuto, was a bishop and saint of the Eastern Orthodox Catholic Church. He was the patron saint of Naples. Okay, so what it was that he died in 305 A.D., and basically became a saint. And at the Naples Cathedral, I think there's also another one that's sort of in New York as well that sort of honors this saint Januarius, whatever you want to say that. At the Naples Cathedral, three times a year on September 19th, which is St. Januarius' Day, that was the day that celebrates his martyrdom, December 16th, celebrating his archdiocese, and the first Sunday of May, commemorating the reunification of his relics. A vial of his blood, which is supposed to be dried or extremely thick in this ampule or this container, glass container, is brought out during the ceremony. Reportedly, this container containing the blood is like a protection artifact. If the blood liquefies, all is right with the world. If it does not, impending disaster. And this is done, whatever, three times a year. And it's actually the ceremony about it. And you can go and look this stuff up on YouTube and on the internet and stuff like that. You can go and read about these the ceremony that happens. And what it's supposed to be is that it's sort of like a Nostradamus, I guess, sort of way, or like this prediction tool that there's impending danger if the blood does not liquefy. And I guess there was there's a whole bunch of occurrences where this did not do this. One was in 1939 when it was brought out. It stayed congealed or thick. So I'm not sure how much it liquefies or not, but I guess it becomes very viscous or whatever, very, very liquid. So in 1939, it didn't liquefy, and World War II happened. In 1631, it didn't liquefy, and the volcano happened at Mount Vesuvius recently in a night, or not recently, in 1980. It didn't liquefy, and there was an earthquake about 30 kilometers or miles away from Naples, and 2,400 people died. And it's been even brought up into this time frame as well. It is brought out every year, and whether or not it happens. And you can look up for more of those occurrences where this prediction tool has predicted what is sort of, I guess, good things happening or bad things happening. And I think there was one there back in the 1600s that it was brought out, and the Pope grabbed the vial, and it sort of went semi-viscous. So it meant that it's semi-like the Pope. But there's been lots of tests that were done on this type of stuff. And I'll just read what they have here on Wikipedia, if I can find it again. I just sort of dropped my phone there. But they've sort of looked at this stuff, and it's been looked at to see if this is actually a real occurrence about this blood going into a liquid. And So the blood cults and other saints have discontinued since it's noted. Okay, so James Randi, if you know who that person is there, James Randi is a skeptic, and he's a magician, and he goes out to debunk certain things. And I guess what he did was he'd gone out and he'd went to local artisans and alchemists, and they had a secret recipe for manufacturing a similar type of this relic. And they were able to create a liquid that reproduces all the characteristics and behavior of the liquid in the vial, using only local materials and techniques that were known to medieval workers. So, as I said before, and this is an interesting thing about history and looking back and how common people were sort of duped, I guess, by religious and mystics, I guess you would say, and use sort of trickery. And you can look at this even in magician skills and throughout the world, where they have these sort of ceremonies and stuff like disappearing people. And you look back in India with the magic trick of the rope coming out of the basket and the person climbing up there. Like, all this sort of trickery was sort of done throughout the area. And some of these things were talked about as being actual real. And so if you look at this part about this vial predicting imposing doom if it didn't solidify, could it be something? Who knows? But there's other ways that you can sort of come out and sort of find sort of ways that these didn't happen. Another one that was given some sort of semblance of being powerful, and I believe this is also on display in an area in India or Sri Lanka. Buddha's tooth, and the story goes with Buddha's tooth is that during Buddha was cremated, I believe one of his followers, Kishi, I'm going to screw up these names, Kinshya or something like that, found a tooth that wasn't fully cremated, and took that, and I guess it was the left canine tooth of Buddha. And what the mystery is, or the lore that goes around with this, is that whom shall ever be in possession of it will have divine right to rule the land, and basically all invading forces would be stopped. So if you go into search on the internet and you look at this time of when this tooth was in possession of the ruling area there, they were attacked several times over the countless centuries and stuff like that. And by them having possession of this tooth, it gave them or maintained their rule of the land, and which is sort of interesting that would be sort of put into that. Now, another one that it's goes into very big depth, and I said that this in several sort of places here, was the Ring of Solomon, or the Seal of Solomon. And And I got that on this part or the other part. Now, this has sort of been, I think it was written about in, I think in the canonical texts of the Bible, the ones that aren't recognized by the Vatican Church or by the real things like the Book of Enoch and Jubilees and all the rest of the stuff like that. But what it was is that King Solomon was given a ring from the Lord, and basically it gave him dominion, rule over all things above, below, and stuff like that. And in some parts there, it's written about that it was given him rule over demons or jinn. And in one of the stories is that with this ring, gave power over the demons, and that's how King Solomon's temple was built, and that's how these large, huge foundation stones and large material and blocks that could not be moved by any amount of human and animal to get them into position were moved, and that's how the temple was built. And it was, he got every single, like in the story, I'll sort of paraphrase it as well as that. He called upon a demon, said, oh, actually, no, how did the story start first? The story started first is that he had this ring, and this native person had come by and said, hey, we're being plagued by this demon out there, blowing this hot wind, and it's killing all our crops. So it came to Solomon. Solomon said, go forth with this ring, go out there, hold the ring towards this demon and trap it and bring it back here. And so he did that. And then as the demon was trapped inside the ring, because the ring had absolute power over everything, brought it back there. And this whole thing about as the person was traveling back, the demon tried to make bargains. Hey, let me out and I'll tell you where the gold is in that mount and stuff like that. So he back to gold again and precious metals and stones. Came back and then brought it back to Solomon. Okay, yes, we got rid of the demon that was plaguing us. Everything's all right again. And Solomon released the demon out of there and he had power over it. And I guess this ring also, the way that the markings are supposed to be the pentagram, and you get into the keys of Solomon and to magical spells and stuff like that. This goes on for, like, we probably talk about this for hours and hours and hours. But anyways, talked to this demon and said, okay, yeah, you've been banished. Don't bug those people anymore. And who is the angel that is like your counterpart that sort of keeps you in check or whatever? It says, okay. So it calls forth, says, okay, well, whoever the angel is, boom, boom, you do this work for me and get whatever I need done. So the demon or jinn had to go and do this sort of stuff. So then he needed some sort of another part done. And the demon is, I guess in the story, says, well, I can't do that. I'm not strong enough for that. Says, well, who is? It says, okay, well, it's demon number 35. Okay, so then Solomon calls forth, because he's got the ring of power, the King Solomon ring, and the way it's marked, and it was, I mentioned that it was marked or given to or inscribed by God, the Almighty, the one God. That's what gave it the power. And so he says, okay, well, hey, demon, says, who's the angel that is your sort of counterpart, the one that can sort of best you? He says, oh, it's this guy, angel number 27. I don't remember all the names of all the angels and how the story's long anyways. So basically he went through, and this went through for all the different demons, and they matched them up with the angels that were the counterpart that could best them or control them. And so that's how basically the temple was built. He got each demon that was able to do things or certain crafts or stuff, like put in the pool waters or build the columns or transport these huge heavy stones into place and stuff like that. And that's how the temple, or how one of the stories of how the Temple of Solomon was sort of built. And then there's lots of stories of things like this that's just in history, where it's sort of these people were sort of also talked about in religious texts, but also talked about in pagan lore and stuff like that. If you look into magical items in the Norse mythology, you can get into things like the hammer, Thor's hammer, Mjolnir. You can get into even in what is that, Saudi Arabia, Arabian Nights, and I guess that's India as well, with the magic carpets. And there's actually a long series that goes into that about how magic carpets were used back then, and the technique that was used of this melding this special type of clay that was around in this mountain range, and with the techniques and the plants that were created, this would be woven into the fabric to make these carpets. I think I'll get more into this one another time, as we're time is almost running out here. But how this stuff was done was that it was there and it gave anti-gravity properties. Now, if you look into the ancient aliens sort of stuff, and you go into India with the talk about their vimanas and their ancient flying crafts, it basically looked like a hat or like a round dome or whatever, like a triangle or rounded triangle, how would you say that, a cone or whatever with the top knocked off, or sort of like a pyramid with the top knocked off. And these structure, these machines, or would you call them flying craft, would fly around. And same with these magic carpets, which were not as big as those, but could be made by certain artisans that gave the user to defy gravity and move across. And there's talks about this, is that in the ancient writings and stuff like that, is that with the conjunction of the ley lines, which is the magnetic lines that crisscross around the earth, that these things would work in pairing that would allow transportation to move throughout the world or throughout the area. And then the story goes on to further on, is that these were used in the temple of Alexandria, which was the library of Alexandria. Sorry about that. And because it was so huge and it held so many texts and many stories of stuff, that the scholars would use these magic carpets there to transport around the library. And when that was taken over and burned down, a lot of these carpets were destroyed at the time. And the knowledge that was there, that was supposed to have built these things or to create these things. And then it was talked later on, is that some of these carpets had survived throughout that fire of Alexandria. And later, when Genghis Khan was out conquering Asia, and that he had heard about that there was still in existence some carpets that were out there, and how they were better than horses and stuff like that. So he ordered his armies to go out and search for all the remaining carpets that were left out, and destroyed them all and burnt them to a crisp, and sent them down to the bottom of a lake or whatever, the ashes down there. And I guess the talk about it all is that this technology or this stuff has sort of been lost. And that's the way a lot of these things in history, and these artifacts, whether they're true or not, who knows. I know a lot of seekers and archaeologists and stories and books and movies have all been written about them. And there's tons and tons and tons of these things to go through and to look at. And it's all part of our history that's there. Now, whether it's true or not, who's to say? I'm not going to say or not, but they are sort of interesting stories. So it looks like we're rounding out our hour here. I want to thank you very much for being along here on Delicious Recipe. And next up, you got Laura there with the Angel Rock. And to all of you, have a good, safe week. And I'll see y'all next week.